Irvin Podcast.
Like the jam says, welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. What a great show we have for you today. The Steelers are no longer undefeated. We shall discuss the highs and the lows of quarterbacking in the National Football League. Certainly one of the highs that any quarterback can have in the National Football League is having the opportunity to throw to our guest today. That's one of the greatest to ever play the game. Wide receiver from the Arizona Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald. And you will get my playmakers of the week. Let's jump right into this. I'm excited about this week. Let's start. Big deal or no big deal? And we start with a big quarterback. Aaron Rodgers became the seventh quarterback in NFL history to reach 400. That's a lot. 400 career touchdown passes when he hit Devontae Adams for a 9-yard touchdown on Sunday against the Eagles. Big deal or no big deal? Folks, this really is no big deal. Let me tell you why. Now, it's an incredible accomplishment. Only seven people in the world has ever done it. So congratulations to Aaron Rodgers. And congrats to Aaron Rodgers on being the one to do it in the fewest amount of games. He accomplished the feat in 193 games. So Aaron Rodgers did it the quickest. But I know big deal it, not because of it being Aaron Rodgers. I know big deal it because what's coming behind Aaron Rodgers? It's a guy named Patrick Mahomes. And Patrick Mahomes will have this record. Make no mistakes about it. He's already at 107 touchdowns in just 43 games. Congratulations, Aaron Rodgers. But for us over here, no big deal. No big deal whatsoever. Now, next up. Eagles bench Carson Wentz, Jalen Hurts starting week 14 versus the Saints. Big deal or no big deal? Folks, this is a humongous deal. A humongous deal. You saw the conundrum and every time Coach Peterson talked how hard of a decision this was. They wanted everything in the world. They wanted it for everything in the world to work with Carson Wentz. Not to mention all the money that they have tied up in Carson Wentz. So this situation, for them to make this move tells you how bad things have gotten. And I don't need to tell you, if you watch football, you see how bad Carson Wentz looked. He leads the league in turnovers and giving the ball away, throwing interceptions, fumbling the ball. He's having career lows this year. Now, he doesn't have the players around him, but he compounds the situation by holding on to the ball and trying to make plays when plays are not there. I always tell you guys, I measure guys and I look at the talent they have shoulders down and I look at what they're dealing with shoulders up. And I'm going to tell you right now, Carson Wentz has all the talent in the world shoulders down. But what he deals with shoulders up is a different thing. Every day he comes to work, he has to see a statue of another man named Nick Foles, who took his team and won a Super Bowl and won Super Bowl MVP. So forever, he got hurt that year, he'll feel that and he'll know, oh man, I didn't win the Super Bowl, my backup came in and won the Super Bowl. So he's dealing with that, trying to overcome that. And then the Philadelphia Eagles go and draft Jalen Hurts, the man that's starting this week. He's still dealing with the guy that's gone, and you're bringing in another guy with a top pick. You didn't go get Justin Jefferson, who was out there, and you see what Justin Jefferson's doing. You could have gotten a number of other receivers, but you got another quarterback, farther damaging Carson Wentz shoulders up. So this is a huge deal. Jalen Hurts, he gets his chance to show everybody that I can play in the National Football League. He stepped in last week and threw a touchdown. And everybody's talking about, well, the team got a little more hype and got a little more pep in their step when he came in the game. And that's cool when you're the backup, but things change when you're the starter. So I want to see what Jalen Hurts will do with that starting role, practicing all week. And now expectation is strapped upon him. When you're the backup, you come in the game, hey, whatever you do is good and gravy. When you're the starters, you got to measure what you do against the expectations. So Jalen Hurts, I'm looking forward to seeing you play. But I want to tell you, folks, I don't know if Carson Wentz will ever start a game again in Philadelphia. But I guarantee you, Carson Wentz will, if things don't work out in Philadelphia, get other opportunities in the National Football League, and he very well may need to go somewhere else to really flourish and become the quarterback that he really wants to be. That is a huge deal, the Eagles bench Carson Wentz. Jalen Hurts now starting quarterback week 14 versus the Saints. Incidentally, you talk about a lucky man. We talk about quarterbacks, right? Quarterback. Hey, look at Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill, he's gotten the only quarterback he's really played, the four games he's played, is Matt Ryan. Remember he played practice squad wide receiver, played quarterback for the Denver Broncos, and now Jalen Hurts will be going up against him again for the Eagles. I don't know what Taysom Hill has in his pocket, a four-leaf clover, a horseshoe, whatever it is, I suggest we all go and get one and put it in our pocket and get some of the kind of luck that Taysom Hill is getting. Let's move on to the next story. Rams beat Cards. The Rams beat the Cardinals. Cardinals out of the playoff picture. And the Rams beat the Cards 38-28. Michael, this is a big deal or no big deal? This is a no big deal because I expected the Rams to beat the Cards. When we had little Mulligan in there, because I picked the Cowboys and the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl, and then, you know, of course, I had to Mulligan that and throw away the Cowboys. I put the Rams in there because I saw Sean McVay had redesigned this offense, and he's doing good things with it. He has a run game that's setting up that offense now. And the biggest key is Cooper Kupp is back. That's what make that Rams offense go. Even though the Rams going to have a pretty tough game against the Pats. But what makes that Rams offense go is Cooper Kupp. And as long as he's there, the Rams will have a shot. No big deal, even though the Cards may think it's a big deal. They fall to 6-6, and I'm sure they expected they will be having a much better season than just 6-6. Look like they'll maybe headed to 8-8. And at first, everybody thought this would be the year that they kind of bust out, especially with the way they started. Steelers lose to Washington. And just stop there. Just Washington. You know, Washington football team. Bigger deal. Steelers lose, Washington win. Honestly, it's a huge deal that the Steelers lost. There's only been one. There's only been one. One undefeated team. And the Steelers had a chance to be the next one. And you lose to a Washington football team. So that's a big deal. You lose to a Washington football team. But if I have to bigger deal this, still a lose, or the Washington win? Man, there's a reason there's only been one team to go undefeated, because that's how hard it is to go undefeated. And as much as we like playing with it, I don't think anybody really think that it'll be done. Or certainly don't think the Washington team, football team, could do it. Maybe if Kansas City was undefeated at that time, people say, oh, my God, they can really do it. But not the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you didn't think that they could really, really pull it off. But the Washington football team winning this game, I think that's a bigger deal than the Steelers losing this game because of what is happening in Washington. You got a head coach that's battling cancer. You got a quarterback that is fighting back from a horrific injury. And in all of midst of all of that, in this COVID year, they're on their third quarterback in Alex Smith, who's coming back from that horrific injury. They started with Dwayne Haskins, went to Kyle Allen, and somehow the thing fell back to Alex Smith. And what a blessing that has been for the Washington football team. Because Alex Smith don't get careless with the football, and that Washington football team, they have a good run game and a solid defense. That's a big win for a Washington football team. I'm going to go bigger deal that Washington won than it is that the Steelers lost. Because I never thought the Steelers would go undefeated. Even though I must admit, there's no way I thought the Steelers would lose to the Washington football team. You have a chance to match history, and you let it go to the Washington football team? Huh. That one will hunt them forever. It will be on your mind forever, that I promise you. Next, Baker Mayfield becomes the first Browns quarterback to throw four TDs in a first half since Otto Graham in 1951. Big deal or no big deal? This is a big deal. Because on the other side of it, the Browns assured themselves with 9 wins of having a winning season. The Browns move closer to going to the playoffs. The Baker Mayfield throwing those 4 touchdowns talks about the way they won this game against a very, very, very good opponent in Tennessee. Tennessee had been manhandling everybody, playing physical football and taking people out. And the Browns, I didn't think they could play that physical, but they did. The Browns held Tennessee to 62 yards rushing. That defense was incredible. But on the other side, the Browns, who have a great running game, only had 118 yards rushing. Baker Mayfield went 25 of 33, 334 yards, 4 TDs. That's 147 passer rating. The Browns know they can win running the football. They're finding out that they can win with Baker Mayfield. And since Baker Mayfield is a first pick in the draft, that's a humongous deal. He's starting to learn how to play the position. We all play football, but we all don't know how to play our position. And there's a process of learning it. And Baker Mayfield now is learning it. And when he gets it all down, you can be scary of those Cleveland Browns. I didn't mean to rhyme. I don't know. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it did. Let it go. Whatever it is. But Baker Mayfield, that's a big deal. I like Baker Mayfield, too. A lot of people get on Baker because they say his commercials are better than his game. Not if he keeps throwing 4 touchdowns and a half. His commercials are good. His game will be great. Next, Giants beat Seahawks. Bigger deal, Giants win or the Seahawks loss? I say the Seahawks loss is a huge deal to the Seahawks because they're going up and down. But the Giants winning this game with Colt McCoy at quarterback as they're trying to climb this ladder and climb up towards respectability coming from an NFC East division, yeah, I say that's a big deal. Coach Judge over there is doing a great job with the Giants. He has that defense playing solid. They beat Seattle 17-12. They held Russell Wilson to 12 points. They sacked Russell Wilson 5 times. Sacking Russell Wilson 5 times is like sacking any other quarterback 10 times, because Russell Wilson is so elusive and so efficient with the football. He's going to move around and throw it away, or he's going to move around and make a play and make you pay. But the Giants said, "You shall do neither." And they got him to the ground 5 times. That's a big deal. And it's a big deal. Washington's a big deal. And the Giants a big deal, because me personally, I am sick and T.I. Red of people talking about how bad the East is. And the East last week had 2 wins that nobody thought they would have. Nobody thought the Giants would beat the Seahawks, and they did. And nobody thought Washington would beat the Steelers, and they did. So all out there, remember this, as much as you talk about the NFL, there's a reason they say any given Sunday, because any given Sunday, you too can get beat, even if it's from the NFC least. Now, talking about any given Sunday, we're not about to talk to any given receiver. We're about to talk to one of the greatest to ever play this game on the field, and one of the greatest men ever to play in this game off the field. Arizona Cardinals All-Pro will one day be a Hall of Famer. Wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald joins the MIP next. If you're a business owner, you don't need us to tell you that running a business is tough, but you might be making it harder on yourself than necessary. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down anymore. It's time to upgrade to NetSuite. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the information you need when you need it. Ditch the spreadsheet and all the old software you've outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place, instantaneously. Whether you're doing $1 million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite. Join the over 22,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Irvin. Schedule a free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Irvin. netsuite.com/Irvin. Folks, I got a special treat for you today. Joining the MIP, this man drafted the first round in 2004 by the Arizona Cardinals, 11-time Pro Bowler, 2 times he led the league in receptions, 2 times he led the league in receiving touchdowns. He's a Walter Payton Man of the Year and Heisman Trophy runner-up. First rounder back in 2004 from the Arizona Cardinals, my man Larry Fitzgerald. Larry, I want to start with this, Larry. As a wide receiver, Larry, when I see that a Heisman Trophy runner-up, I just want to hit this right there. Oh, my God, Larry. You know, did you are a runner-up. Did you think you had any chance at winning this trophy? Because they don't give them to wide receivers, Larry.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like I had a legitimate opportunity. I felt like I was the best player that year in the country. I still feel that way. And often, as you saw with the voting back in the day, it always went to the quarterback who was on the best team. And I don't think it was necessarily indicative of who truly was the best player in college football that year. And I felt like I was the best player. But you know what?
Who won that year, Larry?
Jason White. Jason White from Oklahoma. Yeah.
Wait. But do you think, like, not against him. I mean, he just, you know, he didn't have the NFL career that, you know, that you have had. Do you not think about, like, wait a minute, man, they knew that, you know, That should have been my damn trophy.
I'll put it like this. I wouldn't want to trade it now.
Right. you would take
you
it.
Keep the Heisman, and I'll take, you know, all the, you know, everything that comes.
There's a lot of places I can go with that, Larry. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna leave it at that.
Somebody asked me one time, they said, would you rather win every game and not make any plays, or would you rather catch 10 balls a game and lose every game? I said, let me think about that, right? I said, wait a minute. And then I said, well, I think for the first few years, I'm going to go ahead and lose every game and win and catch 10 balls a game, because I'm going to get a big contract for 10 receptions. That's 160 receptions a year. You know, I'm going to get my big contract. And then I'll say, now let's go for the undefeated. Once I get some stability, you see what I'm saying? So it's a day kind of like that. Like, all right, you take the Heisman, I'm going to get this big career, I'm going to have me some stability. You may have to steal that Heisman one day to keep it going, but we're going to let that go. We're going to let that go. Let's jump right into it, man. Let me ask first the most important thing, Larry. How are you feeling, man? Because I know you've been battling this COVID thing, man. So how are you feeling?
So today was my first day back in practice. I was feeling good. I'm not going to lie. I was a little winded, but I felt good. My legs felt good. And, you know, I dropped a couple pounds, you know, sitting around. And so I felt good. It was great to get back and be around the guy with the energy. Building and, you know, get the game planted and, you know, just being one of the fellas.
Larry, that COVID, man, did it hit you hard? You say you were a little winded. Like, did it hit you hard? Did you have symptoms?
Yeah, I did. I would say the worst was like some body aches. So the first few days I was perfectly fine. You know, when I found out that I had it, you know, I was like, oh man, I feel perfectly fine. And then we played, that was on Wednesday, and then Thanksgiving, and we played the Patriots that day. And I remember sitting there watching the game. I was kind of feeling it. My body was just really tired. You know, I remember sleeping, you know, 12, 13 hours a day for a few days. And it was pretty scary, because the thing that scares you the most about COVID is nobody can give you any definitive answers. So you say, doc, I have this. What does this mean? Well, you know, I don't know. Some people have experienced this. Nobody can give you anything concrete. And so I guess the mind kind of runs rampant, you know, when things are happening.
Correct.
You know, could my respiratory system be affected? Could I have, you know, like all these things in your mind just kind of wanders. And so fortunately, I didn't have anything too serious. And after the body aches, you know, I started feeling better after a few days, and, you know, I was able to get cleared.
One of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with. When I had it last, oh, my God, the headaches. I told my wife, I said, babe, listen, the headaches, man, if I had to go through this all the time, I wouldn't want to be here. You know, it made me feel for people that have migraines, because I imagine this must be what they go through. Like these migraines, it was serious business. And then I couldn't, you know, you didn't taste anything. You can't really smell anything. And then I was trying to manufacture an appetite, you know, lost a lot of weight. Like, that's, man. I don't know how you come off of that and then turn around and get ready to play football. You said you were at practice today. You felt the effects of COVID while you were in practice?
Well, you know, when you're at home and quarantining, like I can get on the Peloton bike and I can get on the VersaClimber, but that's not football practice. That's not running back to the huddle during 2 minutes and, you know, having to recognize coverages and catch the ball and competing against other elite athletes and running up the field after the catch, you know, like that's a completely different situation than riding a stationary bike. And then the mental stress and the pressure that comes with practicing and wanting to be a guy that can be depended upon and reliable in the game, you know? So like when you add all those stressors, it definitely made you feel a little bit different.
Larry, man, you guys have gone through quite a season this season over with the Cardinals, man. Kind of talk to me about that. I mean, because right now, even at 6-6, I thought, man, Arizona's ready to take off. And then, you know, you get a couple games to come and bring it back to a little reality. The last couple games, of course, you were not there, but things didn't go well. Why are you having that wave that you just did when I asked you about it?
Well, I mean, you know, every single week, each team presents a new challenge. And, You know, Kyler, in my opinion, is the most dynamic quarterback in the National Football League. You got Aaron Rodgers and you got Patrick Mahomes and you got Josh Allen playing at an MVP level right now. Those guys are, I would say, more so guys that can run, but they throw the football consistently. You know, you look at what Lamar Jackson did last night against the Cowboys and what he's done throughout the course of his career. He's dynamic running the football, not as dynamic throwing the football. And I think Kyler presents challenges for defenses because he does really both of those at an elite level. But teams have tried to take away his running ability, and a big part of our offense and a big part of what makes him so dangerous is the ability for him to be able to run the football. And when he can run the football, it makes teams, you know, just sit back on their heels. They don't know to play zone. Should we play man? Should we spy? Like, what do we do? And then he can beat you with the passing game. And so when we have that multidimensional option, it makes it very, very potent. And so we have to find a way to get back to doing that where he can be a multidimensional threat and get our athletes in space to make dynamic plays offensively.
But New England, I said this on air now. I was wondering if New England gave up a blueprint here. Because you saw New England said, all right, we're rushing our ends up the field. We're going to keep you in the pocket. And then they told everybody, hey, go as far as you can, rush as hard as you can, and then just start jumping and holding your hands up. Because I'd imagine Kyler's going to see that footprint, that blueprint, until he beats it. Do you think that'll be a problem for him?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, before I left, I don't know where we are in rushing, but we were number one or number two in rushing the football, the National Football League. We were doing a great job of getting chunk plays. We were averaging 4.6, 4.7 yards a carry. And we need to be able to get back. People are going to try to rush us with four, try to contain. We need to be able to run against those seven-man boxes and be able to do it efficiently until we can get teams out of that and be able to get a single high where we can take some shots and make some plays outside. And if things break down, Kyler can make plays with his feet. But we have to do a better job of establishing the run, sticking with the run, staying committed, even if it's not going early.
You got 17 years in, Larry. You're dealing with COVID. You're coming off COVID. Tell me where your body is personally.
I feel better. What's the date today? It's December 9th. I don't know if I've ever felt this good this late in the season. I hadn't run routes in 2 weeks. Today was the 14 days, you know, to be able to get off my feet. And obviously it's not the break that you want during, you know, you don't want to miss time, but in terms of physically, you know, I feel great. I mean, my hamstrings are not sore anymore. You know, the shoulder issues and the ankle issues I had before, you know, I got the break are no longer, you know, bothering me. So from that standpoint, I feel like I could bring some juice to the game on Sunday to be able to, you know, provide a spark plug because I am fresh and I'm eager. I've been hungry for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know, man. It's a monster to have to sit in that room by yourself. And that's the hard thing. Can you imagine that God thing? I thought about it when I went through a letter. Like you say, your mind gets to wondering so much when you're by yourself. All of it, man. I was thinking about, oh, man, if I don't make it through this, I need to call this person tomorrow to say this and to say that. You know what I mean? Just your mind goes everywhere. My mind went everywhere. My son, Michael, he has it now. He called me the other day, Larry. He said, my dad, he has it down in Florida. He said, I don't know, Dad. I said, son, you're just sick right now. Let's not make any decisions right now. You know what I mean? Just calm down. Let's get over this. And you're emotional. And then we'll come back and see how things are. Larry, you just went through all the protocols. You took all the tests. What are your thoughts of how the NFL is handling this COVID and the protocols that you have to go through?
I think the NFL has done a great job. We've had a couple different cases on our team thus far. You know, unlike what you saw earlier with the Tennessee Titans and then what you saw recently with the Baltimore Ravens, where it could really, really affect the whole team, you know, our cases have been pretty isolated. You know, we had two guys on the bye week when we weren't in the building very often and another teammate earlier in the year. But they've been isolated. And so it hasn't taken down two or three players in your position room. And so it hasn't affected us as bad as it has other teams. And you know, I think the NFL is doing the very best we can. Like I said, we're learning new things about this virus every single day, Mike. you know, what works, what's effective, what's not effective, what the necessary treatments. Now we had a vaccine. I mean, there's so many different things evolving and changing. I think the NFL has done a great job. I mean, you look at what happened to the NBA, what happened to Major League Baseball, what's happening to college football, what's happening to college basketball right now. We haven't had to cancel any games. We've had some delays and some schedule adjustments, but we haven't missed any games. And so you have to tip your hat to the NFL and what they've been able to do. And you have to tip your hat to the players and coaches for really taking it upon themselves to do what's necessary to be able to continue to get the show going.
Yeah, I find it as I go through it. Yeah, I get upset because even in the media, it's almost like we want to see something happen. You know what I mean? Like, why are they trying to play this game? I'm like, shut up. Stop it. Stop it. Stop trying to stir up some kind of motion to get on the NFL to make them stop playing games. Let's keep playing these games. I mean, I think we got to keep trying to move forward and look for inspirations and stories and everything as we watch people. Larry, 17 years with one team, man. You don't see that anymore. Especially now in this new sports landscape. I think the LeBron James and all of these guys have made it cool to bounce around and not stay planted in one space, one place forever. The Cardinals drafted you in 04. First, did you know Arizona was going to draft you? Talk to me about that process. And then tell me about playing for only the Cardinals.
So I did. I had no idea where I was going to be drafted. I had a previous relationship with Coach Green. He hired me for my very first job as a ball boy up there in Minnesota. You know, watching, you know, Chris Carter and Randy Moss, Jake Reed, you know, Chris Walsh, you know, Randall McDaniel, John Randall, Carl Lee, you know.
You're a ball boy, and you're watching all those dudes.
Yes, up close and personal. And you really get a great appreciation for – you know, most people get a chance to watch their professional athletes. You get the chance to watch the guys play when they're on the field of competition. But I got to see what made them great. I got to see the extra balls Chris Carter would catch, or the routes that Randy Moss would do, or the thousands of different pass rush drills that John Randall would do. And then when you see it unfold on Sunday, it wasn't a surprise to me watching on the sideline. Like, I saw him do that move on Thursday. I saw him do that move on Wednesday. You know, and I remember – John Randall and Randall McDaniel seeking each other out, two Hall of Famers wanting to compete against each other every single day. I'd imagine it was the same way when, you know, Leon Lett wanted to go against Eric Williams and Ken Norton wanted to go one-on-one against Emmitt Smith and you wanted to go one-on-one against Prime and Jay Novacek wants to go one-on-one against Darren. You know, like when your best players are competing at that level, it brings out the very best. And I learned that at a very young age and I always wanted to compete and be able to go against the very best. And I was hoping Arizona was going to draft me. I love Coach Green. I God rest his soul. I love what he stood for. I knew his coaching staff. And so when my name was called, I was elated, Mike. I mean, you know, when you're in that position, as you know, you were drafted early in the first round, and you understand that. You know,
I wasn't the third pick, though, Larry. You were the third pick. I was the 11th pick. That's a difference.
Hey, Mike, you would have got drafted higher if you would have ran your routes in the 2-point stanza. you could have read the coverages, Mike. You know, it's hard to read the coverage when you're down in the 2-point stanza. Like, come on, man.
Hey, you know what's funny about that, Larry? The best thing to happen for me coming into the league. Because I literally was in a 2-point stance, and when I first got in the league, they stood me up, and we were going one on one, and I had been talking all kind of noise, you know. I just got drafted. I was like, "What? I'm here now." That big rule. I said, "I could catch a BB in the dark. Somebody turn out the lights and shoot a BB gun." I was just talking much noise. Man, the first day in practice, I get up. I was going against Everson Walls, right? I watched Kmart, Kevin Williams. He goes up. He gets around him and he's gone. I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna do that. And I went up. I was like, doo-doo-doo. And Everson, fake jam. He came up, he acted like he was running off and turned around and whoop, man, he jammed my chest. I went down to my knee. I was like, oh God. I said, oh snap. You know, and Kmart came to me. Kevin said, hey man, what are you doing? He said, listen, I gotta do it. I'm a small guy. He said, you're a big guy, just run through his ass. He said, just run through him. And that changed everything for me. I'm like, hey, okay. And since I was in the 3-point stance, he said, you got to get low. I could get out of that stance to go, you know, all I got to do is just get low and then lift my arm and run through him. I think that saved my career having Kmart there when I got there to tell me that, to help me out with that. It was a big thing for me. Now when I look back, I said, man, if I didn't have that guidance, there's no way I would have had this career. Larry, you've been 17 years. Now, do you see young guys looking to you for those kinds of guidance?
Yeah, I mean, I don't try to be overbearing with the guy. I let the coaches coach, but if they have a question that they want to ask me, I'm one of those people that are very approachable, and I would do anything for any of my teammates. But I don't want to be the overbearing guy. This is how you should do it, because everybody's completely different. You look around the National Football League, right, and you watch the way Stephon Diggs runs routes versus the way Devontae Adams, as opposed to DeAndre Hopkins or Julio Jones. Everybody has their thing, the things that they do well, the things that make them who they are. And you never want to change that. I think you just want to continue to add things to what you already do really great. And so if I see things that the guys can improve on, you know, I say, look, why don't you try this? Why don't you mix it up with this? And, you know, so I just drop little nuggets, but I try not to be overbearing. I don't want to be the old dude that I got something to say all the time.
Right. And I understand that. I try to give guys their space. And if they come asking for some knowledge, you'll give it to them. But you don't want to overbear with it. Aaron, how old were you when Coach Green, God rest his soul, when Coach Green hired you as a ball boy over there? How old were you?
I was 12 years old. And my first job was I was security. So I did like camp security. I was like making sure that people didn't have the right credentials to do this and that. And then, you know, my brother was a ball boy and I ain't like that. He was on the field. He got all the action. And I asked Coach, can I be a ball boy too? And he said, yeah, I was wondering when you were going to ask me. And so my first job was actually, I was assigned to the special teams unit. So I was out there catching, you know, kickoffs and onside kicks from Gary Anderson. And then Mitch Berger was the punter. So that's where I really kind of developed like my real good ball skills at 12. I was back there catching punts with David Palmer and the guys back there. And, you know, Pops would be like, man, Fitz, if you can catch two balls at a time, I'll give you $10, you know. And so, you know, they would just, you know, I would just, you know, work on it. And I see Chris Carter catching on the jugs machine. And then I wait till everybody was gone. I had other ball boys shoot me the ball and I'll be catching it one hand like that, you know. So I was working out of the runner stadium steps at night, you know, when they was all done. I was getting my work in. I was trying to take everything I saw them do and I was trying to implement it in my game.
Okay, so at 12, what was the first conversation with Chris Carter or Randy Moss like? Now, wait, 12, you're playing receiver. What were you playing Little League? You're playing Optimist football?
I stayed out of the way. I never said anything to him initially.
You didn't even tell him that you played wide receiver?
No, because, Mike, you know, you had training camp practice. You remember how training camp practice used to be? Yeah. You weren't trying to talk. You out here competing. You're getting better. You know, and I just wanted to watch. I learned through my vision. You know, I don't need to ask you anything. Like, you don't have to tell me. Mike used a stretch release and came back inside, reset him, and then broke it on the slant. Now I'm just taking a mental note. I don't need you to tell me, okay, push him wide, reset him. And then like I can see what you did, and then I'll just take it to myself later that night. I just start working that release and then doing it. I'll do it 10 times on the right side and then go on the left side until I had the footwork right that I saw Chris use at practice. And so I just kept doing that every single night, you know, after practice. And then, you know, as time went on, like my second and third year, I would start talking to him a little bit more. And then later on, when I got to high school, Chris would invite me down to Florida. And I would come down to Boca Raton and I would work out with the guys in the summertime in the morning. Then we go back in the afternoon after the rain, you know, in Fort Lauderdale, always rain every afternoon. So as soon as the rain showers leave in the summer, then we go train again. And so that was, again, another time where I was just, you know, picking those guys' minds.
Man, that's amazing, man. That's an amazing story to think about. And I don't know how many people know that story, but to have that there, you know, to see Chris Carter, Randy Moss, two Hall of Famers, to be able to watch those guys at 12 years old to practice. And ultimately, we all, when I say we all, I mean Chris, Randy, me, you, we'll all be in that Niskin luncheon with our gold jackets one day, you know, to be able to talk about that. I think it's a fascinating story. You're 12 years old. You worked as a ball boy, what, 3-4 years with them, you said?
Until I was 18, until I left the college. Yeah.
Until you were 18.
Yeah, Yeah, until I was 17. I went from 12 to 17. And
so you and Denny built a great relationship.
Yeah, so my dad actually did Dennis Green's radio show. They did their radio show together for 10 years. And so my dad and Denny were like this. I mean, really, really close. And I mean, we would go over Coach Green's house for Thanksgiving. You know, we were really close families. And so Coach Green would always, he'd always tell me, hey, did you see that? Did you see that? And he would always do things to kind of stress me. So I never would spot the ball, but then he said, look, I want you to spot the ball today in 2 minutes. So I would have to run and spot the ball, get the ball down right half, left half. You know, like he wanted to kind of, he was always stretching me, you know, and I didn't know what he was doing, but I felt like he was always asking me to do something that I didn't think I was capable of doing. You know, I need you to make sure go get the scripts right, make sure, you know, like he would always give me these tasks. And so I really appreciated that, him making me grow and get outside of my comfort zone. And I still, to this day, you know, I like to be pushed outside of my comfort zone. I excel, I thrive in that, not only in football, but just in life in general, my businesses and things of that nature. And, you know, without my dad's relationship with Dennis Green, that would have never occurred. And my dad's relationship in the sports community in Minneapolis enabled me to not only just work with the Vikings, but I got a chance to do the same thing with the Timberwolves. You know, I get to go down there. Michael Jordan come to town, he's shooting free throws. I'm rebounding the free throws for him, throwing them back, you know, or, you know, talking to Magic Johnson. And, you know, I got to go down to the Metrodome when the Twins were playing. And I don't know if you know Hall of Famer, God rest his soul, Kirby Puckett. I would go out in the outfield.
Yeah, Kirby, good man.
Yeah, great man. Catch great fly man. Balls out there with the guys. And, you know, like, I really lived, like, the life that, you know, only one could ever only dream of. But I got to see the very best, and I got to see their work. I see Kevin Garnett stay after practice for an hour and a half working on a post move that, you know, he may have wanted to work on, implementing a new move. Or you get a chance to see Kirby Puckett showing up at the stadium at 12 o'clock for a 7:30 baseball game. Seven hours before he has to play, he's at the stadium lifting weights, you know, working on his game, taking BP. I mean, like, these are the things that I saw. And there's no wonder why these guys are walking around with gold jackets and Hall of Famers and the best to ever do it, because they were willing to put in the time and effort.
Hey, you know how blessed and lucky you were to have that. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I remember when I would come to your house, man, and I look and I said to you, you just seemed so stable. Everything you were planned out, everything. I mean, Larry, you were bringing all of us in to work out, and we all go to your house and hang out at the pool, eat and hang out and everything. I was like, wow. You know, I was spending my off season out running around doing some crazy things, but this is how you're spending your off season. But I never thought about the tutelage and the guidance you had that you had seen. Of course, I didn't get a chance to see any of that, but that's fascinating that you've seen greatness. You saw how to monitor and continue greatness.
Well, the thing that always really resonated with me, I remember Chris Carter, when I first got drafted, he called me the day I got drafted. He said, make the league better when you walk away than when you came in. You know what I mean? So that means that you want to nurture the next guys that are coming behind me. It's my responsibility to teach my young guys how to do it so we can preserve the great lineage and history of this game. I mean, this game has propelled you to great heights. It's done the same thing for me, and it's done things for Lynn Swann and so many of the guys that opened the doors for me. Now is my opportunity now to teach them, the young guys that are doing it now, so they can take the game and continue to grow for the next 100 years. And that's, I think that's what you want. You want to be a part of continued growth and success. And, you know, I get a lot of joy when I see a guy come up there and work out with us and then go and have a, you know, 1300 yard season and go to the pro. Like that brings me a lot of joy. I'm not looking for the credit. That's not what it's about. I'm just happy a young black man can take care of his family and do something that he's dreamed about doing for his entire life. Like that brings me great joy.
You're right, Larry. Because, you know, I remember when we were working out and I was trying to help Dwayne Bowe with stuff. And, you know, and then when I would see him on the field and I was like, I'm watching him. Oh, did he do? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great. You know, you really get invested in it because you want to see them do well. You want to work and help them out. And yeah, you do, man. Larry, you've been doing that for a long time. What about the young guys now? You know, you got the young guys, Christian Kirk and DeAndre Hopkins, with those guys, what is it like now that you are? You came in, you had Chris Card and all those guys helping you. Now you're an older guy. You're playing with guys like Christian Kirk and you know, the DeAndre Hopkins guys. What are your thoughts of a guy like D-Hop?
I love D-Hop. I love the way he goes about his business. I mean, he's real quiet, comes to work every day.
He's a quiet guy. Yeah.
You know, the thing that really, really is, I think, one of his greatest gifts is his mental approach. I mean, D-Hop is like, he's like so streamlined. I don't know if you've ever seen a lake in early in the morning when there's no ripples on the lake. That's how his personality is. So it don't matter if the game is terrible, the game is great. I mean, he is even keel all the time. And it serves him so well because, like, it doesn't matter what the situation is. Like, if you took his heart rate, you know, in 2 minutes of a game that we needed to go win right before he caught that Hail Mary, his heart rate would have been the same as it would have been in pregame. It would have been the same as when he was driving to the stadium. Like, he really has an unbelievable composure to be able to see everything and be real calm. And I think that plays a huge factor in why he's able to have the success he has. There's no moment ever too big for him. You know, he's ready to seize the moment at any time. And, you know, it's been fun to be around him because you watch a guy from a distance, you know, only on tape. But then when you get to see it in person, the gift that he has, the quickness and the unbelievable catching radius and the ball skills and just how he's able to find space and zones and all these things you really learn to appreciate when you can see it on a daily basis. And that Joker's talented, man. He is so gifted. And, you know, seeing Christian Kirk, you know, Christian grew up here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I saw him play in high school. I mean, he's the most prolific touchdown scorer in the history of the state of Arizona. And, you know, so already pulled for him just because he was from Arizona. Then you see him go to Texas A&M, just kill it over there, and then get drafted here in his hometown. You know, most guys, that would be a lot for them to be able to adjust to, having to get tickets and cousins and family and all this stuff. Christian's so focused on getting better. Every single day, he is singularly focused on improvement. How can I become a better route runner? How can I catch the ball more efficiently? How can I be more dynamic in the running game? He's constantly, constantly trying to grow as a student of the game. And I love his demeanor. I love the way he goes about it. And I want to see him continue to get better.
Larry, there's no doubt, man. It will be there when you decide to walk away from the game, that ability to do TV or be in the media. So let's get some practice and run around the league a little bit and talk about what's going on around the league. Because you're going to do it. There's no doubt you're going to do it. Everybody talk to me about, man, what do you think Larry would be? I think Larry would be great, man. But, you know, and you want people asking us those questions right now. So let's go around the league. We talk about D-Hop, top guys. Who would you consider the top receivers in the league right now? D-Hop is one. We'll put him in there.
Mike, I hate doing this because you inevitably always leave somebody off the list. I study everybody. I watch guys tape all the time. And you don't have to be an elite receiver for me to watch. Like, they have a young rookie up there in Chicago, number 11, Mooney, right now.
Yeah.
And he runs route like a 10-year veteran. I mean, he can change his pace at the line of scrimmage. He can go fast. He can go slow. He can set you up in an intermediate route running game. He can take you deep. I mean, I really like, you know, what he's able to present. You know, Calvin Ridley, watching him, and you know, he's often in the shadow of Julio Jones, but Calvin Ridley, he could go to probably 13 teams maybe and be the number one guy.
You know, man.
He's got an elite skill set of running routes, being able to make every single thing look the same. So I more so just really try to, like, watch guys' skill sets. And everybody's so different. You know, D-Hop, you know, gets it done better than anybody in the league, but he does it much different than Devontae Adams does in Green Bay. And, you know, I watch a lot of Stephon Diggs and really like the way he's able to run routes. And I liked Stephon Diggs because he can get it done anyway. You know, you come up and press him, he'll take you over the top. If you want to play off of him, he'll slice and dice you all game. You know, like the game he had on Monday night, I don't know if you watched the Monday night game, Mike, but I think he had 10 catches for 97 yards. If you looked at the stat sheet, you wouldn't say, wow, man, he had a great game. But if you look at the routes and what he did throughout the course of the game and when he made his plays, his fingerprints were all on that game. The best play he made that game was was a cut block, you know, to get one of his tight ends in the end zone. I mean, so he had his hands all throughout the course of that game. And so I watch everything. I don't just watch the big plays. I want to see you on the backside of the run game. I want to see if it matters to you to be able to go dig out that safety for a running back that will be sticking his face in the fan for you on a play action play the next play. You know, like those are the things that that I look for. I mean, you knew that if Emmitt Smith was getting off early, you knew you were going to see single high, and you knew the playmaker was going to get some opportunity. You knew that. So let me go out here and dig this. Let me go out and dig this safety out. And then when it's my turn, I'm not going to look out for me, and I'm going to go, you know, get in the end zone and do my thing. You know, so it goes hand in hand. You have to be unselfish. You have to be willing to clear it out every once in a while so Alvin can come in and catch that big end. And you know what that does? That boosts his confidence. That gives him the ability to go out there and play at a high level. So when they start rolling that safety over there and Alvin's on the backside one-on-one, you being unselfish early in the game, helping build his confidence, going to allow him to go out there and run that route and win. Be able to win on that third down. That gets you into the four-minute drill so you can go ahead and put the game away. That's the things that you want to see.
It's so funny as I hear you talk about it. You know, I'm sitting here thinking through it, man. It's just playing the position, and you know what I mean. You see guys in so many different body shapes, styles, and it trips you out. It's like, but they still get it done. You see how big DK Metcalf is?
Oh man!
Oh my God! Like this dude, this big and that fast.
Yeah,
that's a phenomenal skill set to have at that size.
Yeah, I mean, I watch him probably more than anybody because he plays in my division. So all the teams that we're preparing for, I'm watching his tape. And this is the thing, that DK has gotten so much better from last year. I mean,
yeah, so much better.
And you have to tip your hat to Sanjay. Sanjay is one of the best wide receiver coaches in the National Football League, and you can see he's got his fingerprints all on DK. And DK still leaves a lot of plays on the field. Like he drops some balls that you would love to see him make, but the way he plays the game, the way he asserts himself, the physicality of him when he catches the ball, he's looking to knock people out. He's looking to knock down guys in the run game. He wants to impose his will. Yeah. He reminds me of a baby Mike. You know, he reminds me of a little baby Mike Irvin. Man,
I wish, Larry, I can't run like, man. That's one thing me and God, we've had our arguments on this. I mean, some real argument. Because when I see Julio Jones, I said, really? Oh, you going to make Julio, you going to give him that? Hey, yeah, you going to make – I have to – oh, I got to go through all of this to try to run. I got weight vests on my back trying to jog and get fat. All this stuff, man. And you just going to give them that kind of speed. You know what I'm saying? So I've had speed. Ridley, when you're talking about Kevin Ridley, dog, listen, I remember seeing this kid at the combine. And he was so quick and fast, so quick in and out of cut. I said, oh, my God. They asked him to run just a little quick three route, a little 12-yard out.
Yeah.
He couldn't even break the corner, right? He running too fast. I said to him, I said, son, you have to understand speed and control. Once you understand control and you ain't got to run full speed on a 12-yard out, but you can look like you're running – I said, he'll be unstoppable. And he's learned that. He's unstoppable. He's learned how to control his speed so he can really make sharp cuts. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're right. He could be a number one with anybody. He could be a number one. I love watching that kid play. I love watching him play. And DK Metcalf, I thought when I saw him at the combine, he had some issues transitioning. And that's why I didn't think he got drafted high, because he couldn't come in and out of cuts as quickly. But Seattle was smart. Seattle said, we're not going to ask you to do that early. We won't ask you to do it. We'll let you run across the field. We'll run deeper, deep comebacks. Yeah. So if it's a 22-yard comeback, when he takes off the ball, you're going to get out of there as a DB.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So at 22 yards, that DB done dropped his head running. You ain't even got to come out that hard shot. Just stop. He'll keep running. Don't worry. And like you, and now, yeah, right. We lost Coach Sanjay, so I know what he is. He was here in Dallas, and he was one of the best coaches. So to see him get with DK Metcalf and see that thing take off, that is incredible. Larry, how long do you think you have left in this body? You got 17 years, all with one team. Do you ever think about the end? when will it come to an end, or when is God taking you off the field and send you in another direction to do great things?
No, I don't allow my mind to go there right now.
Right.
Especially in the season. You know, football is not one of those games where you can drift. You got to be completely committed 100% of the time, because you literally can go out there and get yourself hurt if you're not focused on what you need to be doing and running the routes to position and doing the things that you're supposed to do. So I don't really allow my mind to get there. After the season, I always kind of do an evaluation check, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically, you know, how I'm doing. And, you know, I don't think anything will be any different this year.
Larry, talk to me about the NFC West, man. What is it like playing in that West? It's such a tough division. I mean, all the teams in that West are very good teams. Seattle, San Fran. San Fran is incredible, even with all the injuries. Hey, Kyle Shanahan does such a great job over there. And you know, you got Rams. I mean, it's an incredible division, man. What is it like playing in such a difficult division?
Well, I mean, it brings out the best in you. You know that you have to come with it every single time you step on the field against the NFC West team. From a physical standpoint, from the execution standpoint. And so it's a great – I feel like it's unquestioned the best division in football has been for, you know, the last 2 years. And I don't see anything changing. You look at the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray only in his second year, only getting better. You look at, you know, what the Rams are doing, you know, with Jared Goff. They just re-signed both Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods to new contracts. They have Aaron Donald.
Cooper Kupp is another one I like, though, Larry.
Cooper Kupp.
Beasley in that slot.
Why'd y'all let Beasley walk out of Dallas? I don't understand. I blame you for that, Mike.
I said that yesterday, Larry. I was on a radio show with somebody. I said, man, that's the one. I did not want Beasley to lose. Beasley lead. People don't understand. Like, it's one thing when you're playing in a slot if you know how to get open.
Yeah.
It's more important to know when to get open when you're playing that slot. You see what I mean? That slot, and some guys, they have the quickness, but they don't have the mindset that plays in there. I couldn't play in that slot.
Yeah.
I couldn't play it. I couldn't muscle the slot. I could muscle somebody outside, you know what I mean? I couldn't muscle it, and I wasn't quick enough in there. But Beasley, oh, my God, I hated seeing him going. I hated to see him leave because, he's a beast in that slot.
Yeah, he is. And you know what? When you have a player that you know you can call a choice route and you know he's going to make the right decision,
that safety
blanket that you provide your quarterback with is invaluable. It's invaluable when you know you can always count on a guy to make the right decision. You know, you look at what Cooper Kupp does and provides that for Jared Goff, and you look at obviously Josh Allen. You know, you can't tell me that didn't correlate over the last couple of years with having
absolutely,
and you know, having to decide, you know, who you're going to try to take away. You're going to take away Stephon Diggs. You're going to take away John Brown. You know, you're going to try to take away Cole. Like, what are you going to do? How do you decide? How are you going to play it out? And you know, that just gives these quarterbacks such a safety blanket.
Larry, I know time is running, man. I want to just dig a little bit into you here, since these last few minutes I have with you, Larry, because you've been to the mountaintop. You've been in the mountaintop, man. I mean, you set records, and you're still going. I mean, it's been an incredible, incredible career. What is it like now, later in your career than it was early in your career? When you went into the games, you knew everything that went on with this football team had to come through you. You know, that's the only way they had a shot. When Arizona went to the Super Bowl, all of it, it all came through you. Now, you know, these are a lot of spread teams, everybody getting receivers in. You don't get to 14, 15 targets.
Yeah.
That seems like everybody's getting nowadays. How is that when you're going to practice every day, when you've eaten at such a high level before?
Well, I mean, Mike, I'm not naive to the fact that I'm not the first person that's ever gone through this. I mean, you went through it. Every single person that's ever played in the National Football League has gotten to that place where young guys are now, you know, very good options around you and they can do it at a very high level. I think now the one thing I do appreciate now more so is being able to still do something I truly love to do every single day. You know, I know I walk on that practice field, I take a moment just to kind of survey everything, and I say, man, this is what I dreamed to be able to do, right? This is what I always wanted to do. And now as I see the hourglass just turned over on me and I'm, you know, at the end of my career, you know, it makes me have a sense of urgency that I definitely didn't have when I was younger. You always say, oh, we'll be better next year. You know, right. Next year has not been guaranteed to me for quite a while. And so I think just a sense of urgency, things that I probably wouldn't have said, I would have let slide. I don't let slide anymore. If I got to say it, I'm going to say it. It don't matter if it's to a coach, to a player, to a teammate, I'm going to say it. I'm going to be respectful in how I say it, but, you know, things need to be addressed. And, you know, I always make sure I do it in a way that's, you know, the person understands it's coming from a good place. And so those type of things are what you really kind of, really understand and appreciate more, relationships that you have with the trainers and the staff members and all these people that, you know, done so much for you over the years that you may have taken for granted. I think those are the things that you really, really, really cherish now as you get older.
Those are the things that you cherish as you get older, those relationships and everything that you have with everybody. Larry, you talked about it, though. You said, you know, when you're younger, you think you're going to always come back. I'll be back here next year. I'll be back here next year. You had one of the most incredible runs in the history of the NFL and led Arizona to a Super Bowl. You guys haven't gotten back there. How much do you think about that? And did you think when you went, oh, no problem, I'll be back here next year, and the next year we'll get one in?
I mean, when you go, I was in my fourth, my fifth season. I'm like, oh, man, this is what it's like. Oh, I'm going to be back. I've been to, you know, AFC championship game since then. But, I mean, it's just our NFC championship game since then. But it's just so difficult, Mike. So many things have got to bounce your way for you guys. For you to have success, you got to stay injury free. There's a couple games you're going to need calls on. There's, you know, pass interference that wasn't called or a holding call that brought something back that, you know, that could have went the opposite way. So many things have got to go your way for you to get there and have that success and be able to hoist that trophy. I mean, you made it look easy. Just do three of them. You want to put them all up in TV here showing out. Always on NFL Network with the rings on, you know, just talking all demonstrative with your hand. You didn't want to throw it in everybody's face, you know, but you know, I still love you, Mike. I still love you, man.
I've been blessed. I was blessed, man, because I felt in a good situation with some good guys. It's like you said, this thing is serious. It's hard. It's the hardest thing in the world to do, really, to get to a Super Bowl. A lot of things have to fall in place, and I was fortunate that those things fell in place when I got Troy and Emmitt and those guys, and we were able to do stuff and do it where it didn't start off great, but we built it to great. But even then, Larry, even with three Super Bowls, man, it ain't a day I go by that goes by that I don't think I should have won five. You know what I mean? I should have won three national championships, at least five Super Bowls. So it doesn't matter. I don't think you're ever satisfied, and I think that's just how we all are wired. That's why you try to reach for greatness. When you see this Arizona team, Barry, how close is this team? How close is this team, this unit, these guys to getting to a Super Bowl? You know, I know Kyler's just a young pup, second year, but is this team close enough that Larry Fitzgerald may hang around even longer because he sees that this team is about to get to that mountaintop and maybe he can just help them get there and get that ring?
Well, you know, I think we have the talent. You look at the skilled players and, you know, offensive line's been doing a great job. You know, we've been decimated defensively. We lose one of our bell cows and Corey Peters, one of our captains, and obviously losing Chandler Jones. I mean, it's hard to replace 19 and a half sacks, you know, in this game when
dedicated
on rushing the passer and getting the team off the field. You know, like, you can't, it's hard to replace that type of production from those two guys. When you look at everything, we have the talent, you know, when we're healthy to be able to compete with anybody in the National Football League any given day, especially with number one back there doing what he's capable of doing. I mean, with him at quarterback, you always have a chance, always. You know, you look at the Buffalo game, and we were dead to right, and that young man willed us to that victory. Will literally grabbed his team and just said, look, we're not losing today. And so, you know, he had that in him. He has the ability to do that.
Larry, go get you some rest, man. I know you just got out of practice, and I appreciate you giving me this time. You know, speaking of practice, one last question I want to ask. The best DB you ever went against, who would you say that was? Before you go, best DB you ever played against?
Who, man? Sherm is a monster. I love competing against him. He's a lot of fun. So intelligent. Highly competitive. But the guy I say I hated to play against the most was Cam Chancellor. Yeah. Cam Chancellor was I had to play against him. I remember, you know, the first week I get in the cold tub every day. You know, I was, you know, doing everything to try to get myself ready mentally, physically, and spiritually to deal with him because he was a problem. Like he was a problem, like a real problem, man. You had to count for him on every single play. And I had to go in there and block him so often. And I used to hate it. He'd tell me, Fitz, you know you can't block me. Why are you in here trying to block me like this? In that tone, just talking to me like that. And I had to go in there and keep fighting, man. And a lot of times I got thrown out the club, too. A lot of times I got thrown out the club. I knocked him down a couple times. Most of the times he tripped on somebody else's foot. But I still got him down a couple times.
Oh, God, it's so funny you said it. I told Chance, when I first saw him, I said, God damn, man, you hit this. You know, boy, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
People don't understand how big he is. I said to him, and I never said it to a man before. I said, hey, you, when I watch you play, I believe you're the first man that will make me question my courage. Because you gotta go catch that ball, that joker right there. You saw that hit he put on Demaryius Thomas in the Super Bowl?
You see the one he put on Vernon Davis?
Oh my God, it was over. Oh, he put on Vernon Davis.
He used to make, he would make business decisions. Like he'd say, I can walk and get this ball, but I'm going to pay for it with my career. You know what I'm saying? Is it worth it, or should I live to fight another day? Right. I'm going to have to live to fight another day, man.
That joker, that's a big hitting joker, man.
I saw you make a couple business decisions in your day, too. Tim McDonald and Merton Hanks, I done seen you get your alligator arms a couple times.
Hey, no, I ain't never had no alligator arm now. ain't no alligator. I might curl it in and body it up so I ain't got to reach out. And, you know, so funny, I tell people, I said, I started bodying it up so people wouldn't see alligator arms. You know what I mean? fear is real in this thing, man. You try to tell me, fear is real. Courage doesn't say I did not have fear. Courage said I had an ability to overcome that fear. Yeah. So when you see them jokers, that fear is real. I just got to overcome it and make the play anyway. Larry, you always overcome and make the plays, man. I just want to thank you for spending some time, man. I know I kept you way longer than I expected, man. And I know you're tired. Yeah, just got over COVID. You just gotten back on the practice field as you get ready for these Giants, man. And you guys better be careful now. These Giants, they're playing now. They're playing. You saw what they just did to Seattle with that defense that the Giants are playing. How concerned are you about this game coming up for the Cardinals?
Well, they're really coming into their own. They're playing really, really well. They're right there, smack dab in the NFC East contention. Dallas is they don't want to compete anymore. And so, I mean, you look at what they're doing. They're playing really well. They're playing sound ball, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And then you see what they're able to do running that football. They've done a really good job over the last few weeks of playing really good. And I mean, the last time they lost was against the Buccaneers, and you know they played against a really good team that day. So I mean, I know we're gonna have our hands full.
Larry Fitzgerald Jr. And before I just want to share this story with everybody, because I said my producer and I were talking about it earlier. I said, you know, I never called Larry Fitzgerald Jr. I never called him Larry Fitzgerald Jr. I always called him Larry Fitzgerald. But I call your dad Larry Fitzgerald Sr. And it's like nobody ever calls you Larry Fitzgerald Jr. No. How is that?
I don't know. I mean, back when I got in, nobody really used the moniker that I was outside of you. I mean, but now, being like my intermediate family, always call me Larry Jr. That's kind of how they differentiated between my dad and I. And I remember as a youngster getting in trouble one time and my dad grabbing me up, just put me up against the wall and telling me, don't you ever disrespect the name. You carry my name. Don't you ever want you to forget that. And I always, in my mind, every decision I made, the things I was doing, how I was living my life, I always carried that in the back of my mind. I never want to disgrace my father and my family name. And now, you know, I tell my dad, I said, hey, now look, hey, you told me when I was a kid, don't mess up the name. I elevated the name up now. Now you don't mess up my name now. You don't mess up my name. You know, I like to give him a hard time. He always laughs about it. You always have a good chuckle, you know. But yeah, I mean, he made a lot of sacrifices. Him and my mother made a lot of sacrifices for me and my brother to be able to, you know, realize our goals. And so we're very thankful for both of their sacrifices.
Hey, tell him I said hello, man. I love your father. He's a good man, man. I'm going to let you go for real this time because I'll talk to you all day, buddy. I appreciate you, Larry. Thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Good to see you.
Much all love, right. man. All right, all right buddy. Okay. See you.
Listen, honestly, people, and this is just not me. This is the thoughts of probably everybody you will meet in the National Football League that know this man we just talked with, Larry Fitzgerald. They will tell you he's one of the greatest on the field and off the field. And he is a true playmaker. Speaking of playmakers, it is that time of the week again. And in honor of one of the great pass catchers of all time like Larry Fitzgerald, all of my playmakers happen to be ball catchers too. Let me tell you about my first playmaker of the week, and he's honorable mention, but I want to give some love to Corey Davis, and let me tell you why. You know, Corey Davis was also a first-round pick. Corey Davis had 11 receptions, 182 yards, one receiving TD in a 35-41 loss to Cleveland. But this is why I'm making him the playmaker. This dude has kept working and kept trying to give all he has to perform in the midst of all the love showered towards Arthur Warren Brown, A.J. Brown. Deservingly so to A.J. Brown, but Corey Davis could have gone in a tank and could have gone away, but he did not do that. He continues to show up and fight for his right to say he is a playmaker. And this week, he is a playmaker. 11 for 182 and one receiving touchdown. That's a great game, Corey, even though I was surprised. I was surprised that the Browns beat Tennessee like they did. My other playmaker of the week, honorable mention, is a dude that even though he's having an incredible season, we are not giving him all the respect and credit he deserves. Devontae Adams, 10 receptions, 121 yards, two receiving TDs. Packers beat the Eagles 30-16. No big deal there. We expected that. But Devontae Adams keeps showing up and showing out, even though everybody knows exactly where Aaron Rodgers is going with the football. Devontae Adams, you are my honorable mention playmaker of the week. But my playmaker of playmakers, the playmaker of the week this week, is my tight end from the Las Vegas Raiders, Darren Waller. Darren Waller, in that incredible win, 31-28 over the Jets, he had 13 receptions, 200 yards, and two receiving TDs. Folks, I don't know how much you know about Darren Waller. I don't know how much you know of his story. But I will urge anybody that's looking for some inspiration, motivation, or just looking for something to grab a hold to give you some hope because you have some loved one or you yourself is going through a hard time, to go and punch up the Darren Waller story. And I guarantee you, it will inspire you to see what he has fought through and what he has overcome and still fighting. And then get on the football field and put together the kind of season he's putting together and put together this game, 13 receptions for 200 yards and two receiving TDs. He was unstoppable. Unstoppable from the tight end position. Darren Waller, your story, man, is incredible. Your game is just incredible. You, myself, my brother, have been incredible. You are my playmaker of the week.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.